Hello and welcome to episode 76 of A Little Bird Told Me, the podcast where two freelance writers tell you all the tricks of the trade. We are here to save you from mighty embarrassment and mortifying mistakes and guide you to the very top of your chosen profession. Freelancing is a funny old world and we want to help you along the way. Tune into the podcast every 2 weeks. And if you go to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, you can subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. So, whether iTunes and RSS Podcatcher or Stitcher Smart Radio are your platform of choice, we've made it super easy to sign up and be the first to hear our latest words of wisdom. On that site, you'll also find any links we mention and links to our own websites and social media feeds, as well as the A Little Bird Told Me Facebook page too. I am Philippa Willits.
And I am Laurie Hartshorn. And what we're going to be talking about today is writing for agencies. So as a freelance writer, you might think, where am I going to find all that work? But that's not actually how many freelance writers work. Many freelance writers prefer the kind of semi-isolation, semi-self-employment of working for themselves, but working in collaboration with other organisations, such as sort of media agencies, digital marketing agencies, PR agencies, things like that.
Yeah.
So what we're going to be talking about is why you might decide to write for an agency, what the pros and cons are, how to go about it, really, if you're not sure how to handle writing for agencies, if you've never done it before and you want to make a confident approach. We're going to look at some tips. And hopefully by the end of it, you should feel a bit more confident if it's something that you'd like to take on yourself.
Because it might be that you're aware that certain writers write for agencies, but you don't really understand how they're set up or just how to approach them. So hopefully by the end of this episode, you will have a clearer understanding of why certain writers do choose to write for agencies, why others avoid it, and if you do want to do it, how to start.
Yeah, I think agencies as a term, I think if you've not encountered one, it can seem like something really complicated.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds very formal and very kind of high profile and not quite sure what they do.
Whereas a lot of agencies, it just tends to be freelancers who found freelancers with complementary skills to their own.
Yeah.
So you can find agencies that are for people. You've got a designer, you've got a marketing guy, you've got somebody who works with content, and then you've got a graphic designer, for example, you know, or a coder. Often with agencies, it's a question of looking bigger than they are. So in this podcast, hopefully, we'll at least take some of the fear out of the whole writing for agencies thing and just demystify it a little bit. So first off, what we're going to look at is why you might decide to write for agencies, you know, what the reasons are behind people linking up with an agency rather than just finding clients on their own. Well, writing for an agency can be a positive way to either kickstart your freelance writing career, boost your income, or find a bit of stability sort of mid-career if your life requires a bit more of a guarantee in terms of regular income. Now, writing for agencies can be a really positive option, actually, for writers who need to work part-time. You know, you can make your availability clear, you can settle into regular working patterns, and then if your clients, as in the agency, if they need any more work, because their clients need more work, it's up to the agency to communicate with those external clients and not you.
Yeah, some people work pretty much exclusively with one or two agencies who provide most of their work in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Other writers find it something they do occasionally or something that takes up a small proportion of their work. Finding a good agency, which is something we're going to look at in the course of this podcast, can be a real bonus for a freelancer. They can pay well, although not all do, and they can save you from having to find some or all of your work for yourself.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
At the same time, you might find that you enjoy the interactions you have with all your different clients and that you really enjoy getting to know different businesses and what makes them tick. I have a friend who's a freelancer and all the work she gets is sent over by two agencies. She's never had to deal with a client directly, other than the agencies themselves. And her days are pretty full of, you know, with work. She works full time and there's always work coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So she likes that. She likes the reliability and the consistency of the work. But, and I would feel exactly the same, in many ways she feels like she's still employed.
Mm-hmm.
She works at home, but other than that, she's doing whatever work the powers that be send over, basically.
Yeah.
And for me, at least, that much agency work would feel like a regular job, and I'd hate it.
Yeah.
So what you might gain in consistency with agency work, you can lose in independence. So if you really love relationship building with a wide variety of people, or really picking and choosing the work you do,
yeah,
it's worth bearing in mind that you might quickly get bored of agency work.
Yeah, that's the difficulty, isn't it? Because when you start out freelancing, you think, this is it, no more boss breathing down my neck. And to a certain extent, that's realistic, but to a certain extent, it's complete bullshit.
Yeah, because alternatively, you can have eight bosses, you
know, exactly,
all wanting different work at different times.
Yeah.
And so
they don't care what the other company's up to, because yeah, they don't know about the existence of your other clients. And I think, as yeah, we've mentioned previously, clients don't like knowing that you've got other clients. It's almost like you're cheating on them.
Yeah, it is. And so, yeah, so arguably, yeah, I love not having a boss. Arguably, yeah, if an editor wants an article from me, they're kind of my boss until I've done it.
Yeah, this is it. You know, they are, because if they're not happy with it, then you don't get paid, or, you know, they're going to be annoyed. Or
yeah,
they fulfill very much the same role as a boss.
Mm.
So, I don't know, I think as you get into freelancing, you become better at asserting your independence, don't you, and picking and choosing which
yeah,
projects you're going to take on and which you're not at
I
the
think
start.
Yeah, when you start getting confidence that the work is coming.
Mm-hmm.
I still find it difficult to turn down work, to be honest.
No, so do
but
I.
The longer you do it, I think the more confidence you have that there will be work.
Yeah, I think when you get to our stage...
We're ancient and jaded.
Gosh, yes. Jaded, yes. Ancient, I'm not going to claim. well, all right then. You start at least being able to refuse work that you know you can't do, either in terms
yes,
of it just not being worth your while. You know, if somebody wants something for sort of £8, then
yeah,
I'm definitely going to say no to that. Whereas at the start, I can't have promised that, you know, I can't promise that I would have said no
yes,
to that.
Yeah.
I might have gone, oh, well, maybe
it's the last work I'll ever be offered.
Yeah. You know, so it's difficult. If you really do like to assert your independence and you're at a stage where you do, then full-time agency work is probably not for you. But, you know, there are good reasons to get into it.
And your choice isn't full-time or non.
No, not
you so. May still choose to do half a day a week with an agency, for instance. You know, and that may fulfill your need for independence and not feeling like anyone's the boss of you.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, a bit of reliability, a bit of someone else finding the work for you can be nice. It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, going back to what you said about sort of trading in autonomy for reliability, some people like that, don't they? You know,
oh, absolutely.
I think saying no to clients, and this will never change, this has not changed for me, and I've been at this for years, and it's not changed for Pip, I don't think she minds me saying,
yeah,
she's been freelancing for years. Saying no to clients, as we've just said, is often one of the hardest parts of being a freelance writer, particularly if you're a bit of a soft touch, or if you've got some needy or very persuasive clients. And weirdly, if you've got like a really good relationship with your clients, you know, sometimes, you know, you can start to feel like you're letting a friend down if you say no.
Yeah.
Like if they're in a panic and you just don't have the time,
yeah,
you can find yourself getting sucked in.
Yeah.
Now, this is one place where having agency clients might give you a bit more structure and support. As I've said, you know, you'll still have to say no to the agency because they're your client.
Yeah.
But if you've made it clear to them at the start that you're only available for, say, X number of hours or X number of projects per week, month, whatever, they're not likely to bring all the hassle to you when one of their clients is hassling them for more work, if they're a decent agency.
Yeah, when the agency is your client, you're still dealing with them, as Laurie said.
Yeah.
So you still have client relationships to deal with. And if they make things difficult, if they turn out to be demanding or unreasonable, you do still have the same issue, possibly bigger actually, depending on how much work they're sending your way.
True.
As if you're dealing with clients directly. However, you know, if you find a great agency that's very respectful and, you know, respects where your boundaries are, then that can certainly solve a lot of hassle, can't it?
No, it can be very useful in terms of new freelancers who might have slight confidence issues as well.
Yes.
Or not even new freelancers, yeah. Maybe if you're just a little bit shy or a little bit shy of asserting yourself.
Yeah, or if you've recently had a knockback, you know, even if you've been doing it for a while, everybody's vulnerable to kind of losing confidence for a while. If they do a piece of work and it gets really bad feedback, or or if a regular client drops them or something, it can impact your confidence, and agencies can be a good way to almost remind yourself that you are capable.
Yeah, and you've got that kind of structure around you. You know, one of the worst things, if we were going to sort of say what the worst things about freelancing are, one of the worst things is the fact that even in the toughest situations, you're the one that's got to deal with it. That's it. You know, if you work for yourself, it's all on you. Nobody else is going to come in while you take a day off and you go sit out in your absence.
You can't refer it to the manager.
No, you can't. You know, so no matter what happens, you have to handle it. And sometimes that can feel a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
So what Pip and I often say to people who ask us if they're struggling to assert themselves is think of yourself as a business, not a person.
Yes, very much
so. Think of yourself as your business. Don't think, okay, well, this is Sarah saying such and such, and everyone's going to think I'm horrible, and everyone's going to think Sarah's such a cow, and, you know, how mean Sarah is. If you think about Sarah as Sarah Smith's copywriting, you know, what seems reasonable from a business is a lot more than what seems reasonable from an individual. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I have the same thing, less so now, but still to a degree with marketing. It's really awkward to say, I'm great at this, I'm great at that.
Yes.
And, you know, really push yourself like that. But if you can think of it as not saying it about yourself, but saying it about your business and what you can offer, it makes it a lot less cringy.
Yeah, very much. I had somebody private messaging me the other day just saying, I've got this really, really horrible client and they're talking down to me and they won't liaise with me properly and I'm not getting the briefs that I need. And I can't find it in myself to put myself out there and say no and put my foot down.
Yeah.
And the only thing you can advise somebody in that situation to do is to think of yourself as a business.
Yeah.
And it's the same with, as Pip said, it's the same with promoting yourself. It's the same with dealing with clingy clients. You know, if a client's phoning you and phoning you and phoning you on weekends, ask yourself, would that be reasonable of somebody to do that to a business?
Yeah.
Would you phone a business on a Saturday and expect an answer? Would you be angry with that business if they hadn't responded until Monday? Well, no, of course you wouldn't. Yeah.
You wouldn't expect anything else.
No, of course not. But, you know, the boundaries get blurred when you're freelancing. So to have a whole agency around you and to be working for clients via an agency, that's just a bit of a buffer zone, isn't it?
Yeah. So if we've piqued your interest and you're wondering a bit about how to go about it, we're going to look now at where to find agencies. I mean, are they in the Yellow Pages? Do you hear about them by word of mouth? So we're going to look at you know, how to get an idea of locating some agencies and finding out about them.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that the web is just full of agencies. It's kind of the good news and the bad news.
Yes, I was going to say, it does mean that you sometimes don't know if it's a bloke in his bedroom.
This is it. You know, I could hear Pip, and I know Pip well enough to hear that her breath was bated there. I know Pip's breathing well enough to know when she's got something to say.
Oh, dear.
So, yes, the web is full of, it's just chock full of, of agencies and so-called agencies. I think that will come to Pip's bated breath. You just got to find the right one to suit you, really. Now, for me, from my experience, social media channels are a great way to get in touch with agencies. Because the whole point is you've got to find something to fit. And with social media channels, you know, particularly active ones, very, very active ones like Twitter and Facebook, you'll be able to excuse me, hiccup, you'll be able to see very clearly which agencies you like the look of, you know.
Yeah, you can get a feel for what kind, you know, the way they run, the kind of clients they have.
Definitely, you know, and if they've got a strong online presence, that's also a good indicator that they've got a strong work profile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want somebody that's not tweeted for say, 6 months.
Yeah.
That's never going to look good. You know, and often a speculative approach in which you approach an agency with your details and see if they're looking to have new writers on their books, that's often a good way to get started, which is nice.
Because
if you're directly contacting a business, it's much, much harder to get interest that way. But agencies do appreciate the direct approach.
And often with agencies, like with freelancing, actually, their work can wax and wane a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be times they take on 4 new writers for a massive project that lasts 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that, they drop 3 of them because they're not employing you, you know.
Or you just don't hear from them again. Yeah. That's quite a regular thing to happen.
And so especially with up-and-coming agencies, they may need a lot of people at the same time sometimes. Mm. If they take on a big new client and they suddenly need to produce, you know, website content for a massive business, they'll be taking on a lot of freelancers at the same time, and then it won't be permanent work.
Mm-hmm.
And so making contact and just kind of keeping your face in the front of their mind by saying hi on Twitter, by following what they're doing, by dropping them a line. You know, you want to be the person they think of when they suddenly need, you know, a lot of content.
Very much, because as we said earlier, agencies are quite a lot like freelancers.
Mm.
You know, it can just be a few people. And if you think about how ad hoc a lot of your work can be, you know, you hear from somebody different day to day, your clients need a load of stuff and then they don't need anything. It's the same thing for agencies. So as Pip's just said, you know, sometimes they'll need loads of work, sometimes they won't need any. And in reality, what that can translate to is that they'll be super keen to talk to you and then you just won't hear from them for six months, whatever. Yeah. But then they'll come back.
Yeah.
They'll go, no, I'm so sorry. And it's just the nature of the beast. It really
definitely.
Really is.
It's kind of like, especially when they're getting established, it's kind of like freelancing squared, isn't it?
Yeah, no, they're super, super busy. They're just like super busy freelancers.
You know, and it's not like if you can look at
freelancing squared, that's actually really good.
I thought so. And like, you know, when you hear of agencies, you might think of like Madison Avenue, Mad Men, you know, who have constant massive contracts dealing with massive brands. But most agencies aren't like that. There are big agencies who have dozens or hundreds of employees, but most of the ones you'd be dealing with would be more, you know, maybe a bit boom and bust. Mm-hmm. And
5 people in an office dealing with, say, 20 clients on their book.
That's it. So, you know, be aware that it can be, you're not like guaranteed work for life. However,
no, not at all.
If you make some good relationships, you may well get a boost once in a while with a lot of work.
This is it. And as we said earlier, you don't necessarily want, you know, Monday to Wednesday, 8 till 4 work. You know, it's nice to just have a relatively regular agency on your books. Like, oh, I hear from these guys like once a month, they need newsletter writing, or I hear from these guys every few months, they need some brochures doing. That's the kind of thing that, you know, plenty of our clients are like that, you know, and that may well be the way an agency ends up being for you. So if you do decide to look for agencies on social media, make sure, make sure your own social media channels are up to date and up to scratch, and that your approach is professional, and that you're not sort of, you know, as Pip's fond of saying, don't have pictures of yourself dancing on tables and off your head.
We're sure that we are sure you look beautiful dancing on a table. We're not insulting that your look, but if you want to get work,
just keep it on the
mile. Try and be on the ground level.
Yeah, try and be on floor level. That's good advice.
That can be the quote of the podcast.
Stay on the floor.
Stay on the floor.
So, you know, tailor your approach for the social media platform that you're on. Chatty, friendly overtures, they're completely appropriate for an approach on Twitter. You know, I got free chocolate from an agency that I approached once. I was chatting to them. They were like, how are you doing? Thanks for the follow. I was like, I'm fine, but I really wish I had some chocolate. And the whole thing just went from there. And eventually they sent me 2 bars of chocolate in the post. So they must have really taken me seriously.
I sent some tea bags to somebody that I was chatting to on Twitter who just really wanted a cup of tea.
That's so, so British. So, yes, we were saying chatty, friendly approaches are completely appropriate on things like Twitter. You know, furthermore, nothing else would be appropriate. You can't go and be all super, super formal and try and send CVs and links to stuff via Twitter. It's social media, and people want to know that you've got a bit of a personality and that you'd be nice to work with.
And also, frankly, that you understand that different tones are required for different platforms.
True. I've had the most ridiculous approaches to me as like a little mini agency when I've been employing and advertising on social media. I've had the most ridiculous approaches, from the ridiculously stilted formal approach to the one word me approach.
Yes.
You know, everywhere between the two approaches. And I think just a good, friendly, professional, cheery kind of attitude, that's the best way to go, because it's social media.
You can be casual and friendly without being unprofessional. It's easy, actually.
It is actually easiest way to communicate, isn't it?
Yeah.
So once you've managed to hook their interest, you know, if you sort of said, oh, you know, I'd love to see about working for you. It looks like you've got some great clients. Are you taking any writers on your roster? Roster and books tends to be the terminology. You know, do you need another writer for your roster? Have you got any writers on your books? Do you have any space on your books for another writer? That's the kind of terminology you'd use.
Yeah.
If you do get beyond that and they are receptive, and they say, sure, send us some information over.
At this stage, it's great if you have a name of an individual person.
Yes.
Ideally, the person you've been talking to on Twitter.
Yeah, and you can easily get it. You can easily, you know, generally what will happen is you'll take it to DM.
Yes,
take it to direct message
and ask for their email address.
Yeah, just say who am I chatting with at the moment? Who do I need to send this to? Who should I make the email out to? You don't need to be formal, like to whom am I speaking? you really just can be quite chatty. But then when you take it to email, that's the time to up it just a little bit.
Yeah, and you probably want to be a bit more formal as well.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. You know, if they're all right with you sending some more information about yourself, make sure that your email or your phone call takes the professionalism up a notch.
Yeah.
You know what you're talking about, communicate confidently with them, send them over a good quality CV with a concise but a clear message. You don't need to do a covering letter because you would have been chatting to them, you know, unless they request one.
Sure.
You know, but make it clear why you'd be interested in connecting with their agency specifically on some collaborative work, you know.
Make it personalised like that. Don't just send them the same form email that you send to everybody. Because as somebody who gets those form emails, you know, don't you?
Yeah.
They can have, you know, found and replaced the name of the company.
Yeah, it's
but you know. So if you can say, I'd love the look of your campaign with such and such.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And make it genuine. Don't just make it up.
Yeah. I think one approach that's slightly risky, but I think it's worth giving a nod to, because I know Pip and I have both done this and it's been successful in both cases, is once you are in a conversation with somebody by email or by DM, you can also point to things that you don't think are perfect that they're doing.
You have to do it carefully.
And privately.
And privately.
But it can work. I've pointed out to an agency before, like, I really love the look of this brochure that you did for X client. However, I've noticed that your copy's a bit clunky.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to be completely honest, I'd say that you'd perhaps scrimped on your copy a little bit because there's some typos in there. Now, you know, what I do is I do X, Y, and Z. I specialise in this, that, and the other. I'd really love the opportunity to work with you on a future project because I think I could do you a good deal, and I think I could do it better than that.
Yeah, and even just something like, I remember once saying to, it was a client rather than an agency, but the same applies. Your website looks great. On this page, you don't want that apostrophe in the title.
Yeah.
I thought you'd want to know. And that not only gave them a hand, it also inadvertently really demonstrated that I'd had a good look round their website.
Yeah, and that you're going to be honest with them.
Yes.
Because the fact is, if they're looking to take on a writer, they're going to want to know that you can say to them, they want to know that you know what you're talking about.
Yes.
And you can assert yourself to the level of saying, this is what I would suggest because reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so going back to email approach then, talk about your specialist areas if you've got any, you know, which you probably do, even if it's just a preference. You know, so it's good to talk about what you can offer each other, whether you're interested in each other. And then once you've got that system going, you can start talking about who's paying what.
And so when you're looking at different agencies, you might, you know, Google agency and find there are several tens of thousands. And so what we want to look at now is what to look for in the agencies you target in a more specific way than what we've just covered.
Mm-hmm. Now, mostly in terms of what you're looking for in an agency, it depends what your priorities are, because it's a whole ocean. It's a whole ocean. Mm. As we've said, you've got massive London companies, obviously here in the UK, you know, I don't know what the equivalent of London is. I suppose New York.
Yeah, yeah.
Would be the equivalent in terms of, you know, the way they price and the way they operate. And then you've got little regional agencies, which are two blokes in an office.
Yeah.
You know, so it really depends. You know, I've worked with a pretty wide range of agencies, both on a more casual and a more structured basis. And I've got something different from every single collaboration that I've entered into.
Mm.
And that's to be expected because, like I say, every agency is different and every agency's clients are different.
Consider your own specialisms and start off by looking for agencies that match your favourite kinds of work. Given that there are lots of agencies around, you may as well start by targeting the ones you think you'd work best with.
Yeah.
And your favourite kind of work, that might be a particular format or a style of writing.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps sales copy, perhaps technical writing.
Yeah.
Or it might be specific topics or subject areas, because a lot of agencies are pretty specialised and that could mean a brilliant match for you.
Yeah.
So don't just launch yourself at the first ones you find. Instead, consider what you really want to spend your days doing and target the agencies that seem to fit your preferences.
Yeah, because again, you know, and we say it, you know, agencies are like freelancers. And if you think about your own business, a lot of us end up specialising without even meaning to.
Yes, we suddenly realise that most of our work is in a particular area and we've got quite good at it.
Yeah, and that's just the way it works with agencies as well. Mm. So as Pets just said, you know, have a look at their portfolio, have a look at who's on their books, have a look at who they're shouting back. Feel free to ask. You know, yeah. Feel free to say to an agency, who do you guys mostly deal with? You know, are you guys mostly regional or is there a particular industry that you work with? I've asked this question many a time. Asking questions of agencies doesn't make you look like you don't know stuff. It makes you look like you know the questions to ask.
Definitely. And as Laurie said, a big indicator to look for is the companies the agency's working with. Often they'll have a page on their website dedicated to showing off their client list.
Yeah.
So try and find that page on the different agency websites that you look at. Are these companies that you'd love to work for?
Uh-huh.
Are they companies that you'd find ethically problematic?
Yeah.
Are they companies that you just feel you have no specialism in?
Yeah.
You'll get...
I'd avoid law, for example. I'm never interested in writing about law.
That's it. So you can get a good idea. Sometimes you look at that showing off page and think, I need to work with these people. Other times you look at it and think, oh, that is so far away from what I want.
Yeah, completely. I mean, if you find a company that's got a load of, I don't know, tobacco companies and medical testing companies and maybe a gun company.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, that might not be for you. Or if you're vegetarian and they've got
lots
of big butchers on there, you know, might not be your cup of tea. I remember being asked to write for a hog roast company and wondering whether I could really go ahead and do that because I'm vegetarian.
Yeah.
So as well as having a nosy at the portfolio, what you can have a nosy at Agencies' online presence, as we said earlier, do they seem big and corporate or small and friendly? Now, it's difficult. Like we say, a lot of agencies, in fact, I'd venture most agencies out there are trying to look bigger than they are.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them will be very hesitant to say how many people are in-house on their website because it can just be one guy and his mate.
Mm-hmm.
Do be a bit hesitant. But, you know, if you can see that they've got a portfolio with things like BP and Shell and BT and Tesco and, you know, it's pretty obvious that they're quite big. And it can also be a good gauge of their corporate culture as well. You know, are they big and corporate and a little bit faceless?
Mm-hmm.
Are they super professional or are they small, chatty, chirpy? You know, and their social media feeds are a really good measure of the company culture. You know, some of them are all about return on investment and this is what we did and case study and promotion and figures and stats. And others are up for a giggle. You know, some of them aren't even spelt that well.
And that's entirely, you know, you may well have a preference for one or the other.
Yeah.
The more corporate ones may well pay better. They may be more established with bigger clients. You may...
There's more kudos for writing for a bigger agency.
Definitely. You might, you know, want it to just be quite functional and you're not too bothered about making friends. You know, you just want to get the work and do it.
If you want really streamlined processes.
Yeah, in which case you'd probably want to go for a big corporate one. If you're feeling a bit less confident or if you'd feel a bit safer with a more one-on-one experience, you know, you may look for a smaller place. It's all about what you're looking for and what would suit your style of working.
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind the smaller ones. I have a preference for smaller agencies personally, but smaller agencies are more likely to come to you with an attitude of, can you just? Like, can you know, my experience at least, because it's all hands on deck. You know, say there's only four or five people in-house, they may come to rely on you more than a large corporate agency.
Yes.
Whereas a large corporate agency, it was very much, hello, here is brief A, please fill in brief A. And it was very simple. And if you, like Pip said, if you don't particularly value or if you're not particularly looking to get that human interaction and you're looking to get better pay and more kudos, then a corporate agency might be more your style. UK writers, London agencies, as I've said, tend to pay considerably more. However, as you'd expect, it's harder to get on board with them. Because there's more competition. People want to work for them. They often have bigger rosters. They'll have writers assigned to certain accounts. You know, it's there's a lot more structure. There's a lot more process and procedure in place. So it's harder to get in. You know,
and if you are in, you're probably going to do better out of it.
Yeah, if you're in, you're definitely in. So again, it's a trade-off. And conversely, regional agencies, they tend to pay less, but if you look for agencies in the major regional cities, you're likely to do better in terms of fees and profile of the clients than if you go for like a small town agency. But then you might want to go local. You might want to support your local economy and go for a really local agency. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Now, just touching on that, there isn't any reason to limit your search, I don't think, based on geography, unless you want to.
Oh, absolutely. This is the joy of the internet. I have clients in several countries, and it doesn't matter that we're not dealing in the same currency or, you know, because of the internet, which has made freelancing a whole load more accessible in ways I can't even begin to explain. There's no need to think, well, I don't live in Birmingham. Can I approach the Birmingham agency? Of course you can.
Yeah. You know, then why on earth not? Now, some agencies do prefer writers from their region. One of mine does, for example. We deal strictly over the phone occasionally and by email on an almost daily basis. I think in their minds, though, it is nice to employ relatively locally, and I think they like the idea that I know the region. It's kind of vaguely handy sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and I need to allude to clients' locations in my writings and just say, you know, just down the road in Blackburn or just up in such and such. You know, I can at least make those vague up, down, left, right noises.
Yeah.
But it's by no means a sticking point. So if there's an agency you really like the look of, but they're a bit iffy about you being far away, it is worth trying to persuade them and just doing a bit of research into their locations.
And so Laurie mentioned earlier that the pricing structure with agencies may be a bit different to the kind of pricing that you might be used to negotiating with clients, although that depends on how your general pricing structure looks, really. But it's worth being familiar with the way a lot of agencies work in terms of how fees are measured and paid.
Yeah, definitely. Now, as I've mentioned, a lot of agencies do prefer that you charge by the hour or by the day, depending on the kind of work they need from you. So do make sure that you've thought about those figures and you've got them to hand. It's also very worthwhile, having said about hourly and day rates, to convert your hourly rate into some set fees where possible. So it tends to be helpful for things like formulaic work, like SEO blog posts of about 500 words. Say that's a common one on my menu.
Yeah, same as for everyone, I suspect. As well as looking at your hourly rate, a lot of places say they work on an hourly basis, but actually they insist within that particular tasks take a certain amount of time.
Right. It's so, true. They're so awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. And so if you know that a blog post will take you, say, 2 hours to write, and you've agreed a decent hourly rate, you might think, great. But if they then insist that that post should only take you 45 minutes, and that that's the maximum they're paying, then in fact, they're requesting something other than an hourly rate, and you're going to be in trouble financially, because you might have worked out a very fair hourly rate, but they are then undermining that with unreasonable expectations of timing.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really anything you can do to head that off before it hits.
I think you can ask, you know, whether they have set times for pieces of work.
Yeah, I suppose so. So in terms of setting your fees out initially, in my experience, what tends to happen is there'll be an initial conversation about prices. So after your initial bedding in period, you've got to see if those prices are still working for you and the agency. Adjust them where necessary, and like I say, sometimes you really do have to put your foot down, and carry on with what it tends to be, in my experience, carry on with the regular work, say these blog posts that we've said, being charged at that rate, and then ad hoc projects. You are fixed to a certain extent. Quoting accurately is a skill that you do acquire through time and painful experience.
Yep.
You know, you'll underquote a few times and then you'll realise how much it hurts and you won't do it again, basically. But yeah, no, that tends to be how it works. You know, you settle in with a bedding in period, you work out what your regular blog post fees are or press release fees or, you know, one web page of about 450 words, say. You work out what those fees are. Those tend to stick-ish. And then quote project by project. And that's a perfectly reasonable way to do it. So if you're being told by a client agency that it's not, you're being told wrong.
Plus, a lot of this is exactly the same as setting your prices for any work with any client.
Definitely.
I will put a link in the show notes to, we've done a series of episodes on how to set your fees and how to ask for certain fees. And
they were really good, weren't they?
They were great.
Podcasts.
And so if you're kind of listening to this and thinking, too much information, I don't know what to do, don't panic. Head over to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com and there will be links to those episodes. I think it was there 3 in a row.
Yeah, there were. Setting your fees, raising your fees, and something else about your fees that I can't remember.
Yeah. Plus our recent episode 74. Was about justifying higher rates.
Yeah.
And so I will link to all of those in the show notes. So if you're listening to this bit about the fees and thinking, I need more detail.
Yeah.
We've got that for you.
I need more information and I need it slower.
That's it. Because at the moment we're covering it as part of a bigger, a lot of the advice is the same with agencies and with regular clients.
So if
you're listening to this and thinking, don't panic, there's more, and it's all linked to.
Definitely, and it's quite interesting because Pip tends to charge on a project fee basis, and I tend to charge on an hourly basis.
That's it. So we both went through our kind of system, didn't we, and how we go about it. So
we're not going to push you one route or the other.
Yeah, no.
There's a lot of information.
And we actually, these days, both do a bit of both, which is interesting because I think we do have a preference. You know, I tend to prefer project fees. Laurie tends to prefer hourly fees. And yet we both, you know, some clients just prefer the other, and that's fine, and you have to work with that.
Yeah.
So we've got experience of different ways of doing it, and yeah, and we know the pros and cons of each. So do, if you're listening to this away from the website, go to the website and follow those links and listen to much more of us talking money.
So quick look at the pros and cons then, just to sum up, just to sum up this agency business. So the pros, my first pro really would be it takes the stress out of business development to a certain extent.
Yes.
So once you've found an agency and they're happy with you, they do the client management. You don't have to put up with people calling you.
Yeah.
I'm not getting phone calls from different people. I'm not having to do the admin. It's sort of plug and play work. You know, they find the work, they deal with the client. When they've got a brief, they send it over to me. And it's nice because I deal direct with a lot of clients, and it's nice just to have that change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be quite handy for people who are just starting out and they need a bit of security. People who just need a limited amount of work, so say maybe new mums who want to get back into work part-time and they just want a limited amount of work for a while and they want it as simply as possible. It's good to work with an agency if you love writing but you hate managing clients. If you only want to deal with one client, then just the agencies could be perfect for you.
Mm-hmm.
You get to vary the clients that you work for without having to hunt them out. You know, you only have to work with clients once the agency's won them. So you don't have to go hunting at all. You know, you can work with a huge variety of companies without ever having to make that first approach.
Yeah, another benefit is that you can get some work for some really high-profile clients under your belt.
Yeah.
You know, you mostly wouldn't be able to approach, I don't know, Coca-Cola and get some writing work. However, if you're working with the right agency,
yeah,
you could end up writing for them. I did some work with a London agency and I had to sign secrecy clauses. So I can't.
It burns you, doesn't it?
Oh, I know. So I can't openly say I have written for these massive companies. But it feels good to me that it's a bit of a boost to my confidence, I think.
You can allude to it as well. You can say to your clients, I've worked with industry leaders.
That's it. And, you know, it's a good feeling to, that's, you know, I love small clients. I'm not saying that I want to do all my work for the massive multinationals, but once in a while doing some work for a massive multinational.
It's an ego boost, isn't it?
It is.
Let's not lie.
Yeah, that's it. And so that can be, you can get access to clients basically that you would never have access to on your own.
Absolutely. And regular income, if you get regular blog posts for a client company at one of my agencies, I write weekly blog posts for between 5 and 7 of their clients. And it's just easy money. It's easy money. You know, well, I've got to know the clients.
Yeah.
I've got to know their industries. I write a weekly blog post. They get their content. My agency gets their money. I get my money. Everybody's happy. And I don't have to do anything. And I imagine if you were in a bit of a difficult period, you know, if you were tightening your belt, for example, or like I say, if you just had children or if you'd got very young children and you just didn't have the time to keep your own business ticking over as actively as you'd like, then it would be a good way to get the regular income and the guarantee of a regular salary without having to go back into working in-house for somebody.
And similarly to the pros, the cons of working with agencies vary from place to place and, you know, your own preferences. But one comment that comes up a lot with freelancers and agency writing is that you might feel like you've got a boss. If you're just dealing with one main person in the week, you might start to feel a bit like you're employed, and that may not suit you if you're a freelancer, because you really want that.
because they can overstep the boundaries, can't they? I think.
Yeah, it's like Laurie said earlier, that you can really fall victim to the can you just syndrome.
Yeah, it's project creep, basically. It's like client creep.
Yes.
You know, they can start to get so used to having you there for regular work that they forget, actually, that you're not an employee. And it's your job to keep that in mind.
Yes. Another thing is that when you're working at home on your own, you might really value the fact that you have 10 or 12 or 15 clients to deal with, and that you get, you know, to have interactions with different people. If you're dealing, especially with one agency or two, you might just miss the interactions that you have, that you could have, with, you know, with a variety of people. You're stuck in your house on your own already. You might want to talk with more than one person.
Especially as you become more adept with their clients and their industry.
Definitely. And the other con that I can really think of is, like, for me, I tend to work office hours roughly.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the joys of freelancing is the flexibility for me.
Yeah, you disappear all the time.
Yeah.
Don't believe her, listeners. She's always off gadding in the sun.
I can take the afternoon off if it's sunny and work in the evening instead. I can...
Or work in the pub.
Or work in the pub. And as long as I meet the deadlines I've got, it doesn't matter if I do it at 8 o'clock in the evening or 8 o'clock in the morning, frankly.
God bless Boomerang for Gmail.
God bless Boomerang for Gmail. Without which we would be a shell of what we are.
Well, gosh, we wouldn't even survive. God bless you, Boomerang.
But if you're doing a lot of work for an agency, they may expect you to reply to every email within an hour or two.
Yeah.
And if it's sent at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you might be considered unreasonable if you're out for the afternoon.
Yeah.
And for me, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, that doesn't suit, does it?
It doesn't suit my style. Also, one of the reasons that freelancing is great for me is that I am disabled and that I need that flexibility for that reason as much as because it's a preference.
Very much so. I mean, sometimes you'll just be having a bad day in terms of health and... Yeah. You can't do anything about that. And I think the same could be said, although, you know, it's obviously not the same thing at all. But the same could be said if you've got young children.
Or, oh, absolutely.
If you've got other commitments, say, you know, sometimes I'll find that something as simple as my clients need me for the afternoon. And then the agency's like, oh, where are you? And I have to remind them, actually, sorry, I'm dealing with my clients at the
same time. That's it. And there are some agencies that work by sending out a brief to, say, 3 or 4 of their freelancers, and whoever grabs it first will get the work. And so, again, if you're working different hours, you're going to miss out on a lot of that work.
Yeah, that could work for you. You might not mind. Yes. Or you might think, well, actually, I miss out every single time and I get the crappy work.
So if you want to work 10 till 3 because that's when your kids are at school, then that can be a brilliant setup for an agency.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be able to take advantage of a sunny afternoon and go to the park and do the work in the evening or get up really early the next morning, then in that case, it depends on how the agency works, of course, but it's worth checking that you're not going to be expected to be on call.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the same problems as you do, because I tend to be a lot more home-based, and then I take Fridays off.
Yeah.
I have a three-day weekend, so I have Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. So Monday through Thursday, I'm at my desk, so it's really not an issue, whereas Pip's a bit of a gadfly, and she's far, well, you are, and you're far more of a night owl than I am. After about 6 p.m, I am done for the day.
Whereas I have a massive energy boost.
Yeah, you have
there.
A second wave around 6 p.m. I'll be kind of logging off the emails going, Pip, I have had enough. I have been here since 8. I am going. She'll be like, oh, I'm just working on something.
And then, because Laurie and I do this accountability thing where we email each other with the work we're doing, it is quite funny that by about 2 o'clock, I'm a bit useless, and then suddenly at 5, I'm suddenly like, right, my plan for the evening is to do these 8 pieces of work.
I get massive guilt trips because I'll get an email at like 8:30 at night going, what are you working on right now? Nothing, love. I'm watching telly. I'm eating some food. I'm having a break. Slave driver. God.
So, yeah, the fact is that working with agencies as clients rather than directly with companies, agencies work in as many ways as companies do. There are all sorts. But if you can find the right fit for your style of working, for your area of specialism, for your fee expectations, then you can get a really good setup going.
It can be lovely, just like anything else. It can be lovely, it can be a nightmare.
Yeah. Similarly, if you sign up with the wrong agency and it just doesn't work out, it can be a nightmare, especially if you've committed to doing a large amount of work for them.
Yeah.
So all the stuff we said about how to find the right agency, how to find the one that suits you, is really important, rather than just sending out blanket emails to anybody whose website has agency in the title.
Yeah, because aside from anything else, that's just really, really rubbish.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work for you, but it's not going to work for anybody else. Blanket emails are rude. Let's just finally put that one to bed. Blanket emails are rude.
And terrible.
We don't like them at all. And if you do them, slap on the wrist, because we don't like it. So that sums it up.
If you can find the right match, go for it. Give it a try. See how you get on. If you think it sounds horrific and you want to carry on with your one-on-one clients, go for it. Like anything with freelancing, there are a lot of options you can choose from. Go with the one that suits.
Perfect. I'd say that sums it up perfectly.
And so now it is time for the famous, for the glamorous, for the terribly exciting,
marvellous
Little Verge recommendations of the week.
Oh, the recommendations of the week.
In which Laurie and I suggest something that we've read or seen or played with, or something that we think our listeners would enjoy or find useful.
In which Laurie is forced to join Pip on her tour of the internet, because Pip reads everything on the internet. Like, she reads about 88% of the internet.
Daily.
Daily. All the time. If it's out there, Pip knows about it. You know, there's no forgetting articles with Pip. You know, Google can do what it wants. Pip's not going to forget. It's like an elephant.
In many ways.
Pip's always got a wealth of recommendations. And I usually just find one thing and think, I really like that, but will the listeners?
And they do. Everybody loves all of our recommendations without fail.
Of course they do. So my recommendation this week is, it's not a work-related one, actually. It's a wordy one, but it's not work. Because I just thought it's nice to do something other than work for a change.
Oh, definitely.
So it's on the website, I think it's mic.com. I never know with these things.
Yeah, I'd probably go for mic, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's mic.com. And it's in the arts section, and it's 14 brilliant pieces of literature you can read in the time it takes to eat lunch. And I just thought it's fabulous. One, because I love short stories. Mm. Two, because I write short stories. And three, because I'm always looking for things to do when I'm either sitting waiting at the doctor's surgery, or I've got half an hour, or I'm having my lunch, or I'm on a train.
Yeah.
And I love little snippets like this. I'm a big flash fiction fan.
It's a great approach, isn't it, to say... Because a lot of people would think, who's got time to read a short story? You know, there's news and there's Facebook to catch up on. But the way they framed it as things you can read in the time it takes to eat lunch, it does make you think, actually, I could do this today and I can read another one tomorrow. And it puts it in a context where it seems like something you might want to do.
Definitely. And they've got a lovely selection of writers. Like I said, there are 14 stories. It's got a little profile on all of the writers. There's great diversity. You know,
there's
you've got
a lot of women here.
Yeah, loads of women, women of colour. It's really, really nice. I mean, you've got some of the old ones that you've got to check off on there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got a really decent range. And Margaret Atwood, they get extra points for Margaret Atwood because I love her. She's superb. If you don't know Margaret Atwood, The Handmaid's Tale.
That's
brilliant.
The one to start with, isn't it?
Brilliant novel. I'm still trying to work my way through some more of her stuff. But there are just 14 lovely, lovely stories, massive variety in terms of the stories, massive variety in terms of the writers and the diversity of the writers and their writing style and their background. So go for it, frankly.
That's a great recommendation. My recommendation this week is from Harvard Business Review, but it's not as businessy as that sounds.
Yeah, of course.
It's an article called... Well, it's an article that kind of feeds into my general philosophy of life, which is try to be nice.
Aww, I can vouch, people. Yeah. Just try.
But I'm failed.
There was a backhanded compliment, if ever there was one.
Faint praise there.
Thoroughly damned. Right, go on.
Yes, I do think it's very important to be as nice as we can, because the world's a cruel place, and being nice to each other is, you know, it helps. It helps us all.
True.
And this article is called, If You're Feeling Unappreciated, Give Someone Else Credit.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and it's about how...
I hope I'll be your first port of call. If you're feeling down and you want to praise somebody copiously, by all means, get in touch.
Of course. I called you something fabulous yesterday on Facebook, I think.
Did you?
I can't remember what it was. Wondrous, maybe?
The Ever Wondrous, I think.
Yes. Oh. So, there, Laurie is wondrous, just for the record.
Oh.
And so, yes, this article is about, it's about in business terms, that actually being open and active about appreciating someone and saying, you know, I really appreciate when you do this, is actually not just feel good, but actually can have really positive effects on business relationships and the whole kind of psyche of a business and how it's run. And it's backed up by some kind of business theory and case studies and stuff. But actually, like, there have been studies that show that couples that show appreciation to one another have longer and happier marriages. And so if you, you know, transfer that to a business context, of course it's nicer to be working in a place where people appreciate you, or yeah, working with people who appreciate you. And so it seems obvious suddenly that actually am I expressing the appreciation for my clients or for my freelance colleagues?
Yeah.
You know, do you ever say, you know, I really enjoy working for you and I really appreciate that you gave me a chance because I think we're doing great work together? And you know, we probably think that sometimes, but it's quite a leap to actually go on to say it. And actually, how lovely is it when you do get that feedback?
From experience, when I have said it to people, I've said it to a client recently, I said, oh, do you know, when you send me the briefs that way, that's so helpful.
Yeah.
That's really, really helpful and it's really good. And, you know, it's so much easier for me and, you know, I really appreciate it. And, you know, if they've given me feedback, I say, you know, thank you for the feedback. Thank you. It's always nice to hear.
Because I realised a few years ago, I was thinking about the thing that we're all quick to complain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a company does something wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Especially now with Twitter and Facebook, it's so easy to just tweet Tesco and say, the delivery's late or... You know, it's easy, and we all do it, I think.
You've been following my tweet feed again.
Well, that's it. And I decided, and I also realised that at the same time, if someone does something well, then we might go home and say to our friends, oh, there was a woman in Tesco today who was so helpful, but we rarely pass that on.
Yeah.
And I started trying to make a concerted effort to pass on positive feedback as well as negative.
Yeah.
If something stood out, and it's so rare that some companies don't even know what to do with it.
No, I've noticed that. I think it's a fair time to tell listeners that I am expecting a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I went for a pregnancy massage the other day, which is basically just an excuse to get somebody to rub me down for like 90 minutes and work out all my aches and pains. The moment I got home, oh, I was so de-stressed and so happy that I got on Twitter and I said, oh, I've forgotten the name of, and I genuinely had, it was just dreadful because I was drifting off. I'd forgotten the name of the woman who'd given me the massage, but I said, you know, I've forgotten her name, lovely Irish woman. I was like, great service, really, really enjoyed the massage, totally happy. Mm. I hashtagged pregnancy, hashtag massage, just to give them a bit of an extra social boost.
Yeah.
And they were really surprised.
Yes.
I was like, oh, yeah. I've never heard of them. They were really, really local to me. And they were like, yeah. Thank you so much yeah. for the wonderful feedback. And Jackie, who was your masseuse, she says thank you too. And, yeah. oh, it was a regular loving. It was lovely.
That's it. It takes people by surprise.
Yeah.
And it feels great. That woman will have had a glow about her all day after that.
It's never going to do any harm. You know, that could be the difference between that person getting a bonus and not getting a bonus. You don't know.
Yeah. In June last year, I did a thing where I did a random act of kindness every day.
Aww.
And so every day through June, I did a random act of kindness, and I did them as anonymously as I could because I didn't want it to be about me or random acts of kindness. I wanted people to feel really nice in a really surprised way.
You warm, fuzzy thing.
I know. So, like, I left packets of sweets on bus seats with just a little note saying, this is a random act of kindness. If it made you
poison.
If it made you happy, do one as well. I put sweets in pockets of clothes in charity shops. But the thing I did on the first day was I sent a thank you card to the woman on the deli counter in Sainsbury's. Just because she's always, like, she goes the extra mile. She can't do enough to make sure you get exactly the cheese you want. And she's always so friendly and helpful.
Cheese warrior.
And I just imagine that in, like, in the 9-to-5 drudgery of working in a supermarket, she gets very few pieces of positive feedback, even though she does a great job. And so that was my first. What I did on the first day, I didn't sign it, I just said from a happy customer or something.
Aww.
But it's that kind of thing. I wanted her to know that it doesn't go unnoticed that she goes the extra mile.
Aww.
And then that will have cheered her up and encouraged her in what she does.
It's the ripple effect, isn't it?
That's it. And it does have an impact, and it can in business as well. And you know, this article talks about creating an appreciation culture. Because he's talking about this particular company where the boss of the company felt unappreciated.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, to create an appreciation culture, the leader has to get the ball rolling. So instead of feeding Harry's painful plea for appreciation, in the meeting,
Harry.
Yeah, I know, in the meeting we flipped his request and said, Harry, we hear you, but we are going to ask you to do something that's going to feel a bit uncomfortable. Look your sister, which was his colleague, in the eyes and tell her something you appreciate about her.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story goes on where he eventually does this, and then immediately, with no urging whatsoever, his sister came back with what she appreciated about him.
Aww.
In quite a natural gratitude way.
Yeah.
And that is the kind of, although you shouldn't do it to be appreciated in return, that can often be a really nice consequence.
No, I've found that. Like I say, when I've praised my clients,
yeah,
they came back and said, oh, you know, well, just want to let you know that we really appreciate the work that you do.
Yeah.
We're really happy with it. And it's like, oh, well, you know, you didn't have to, but go ahead.
And especially, I think, in Britain, this isn't, we don't emote enthusiastically.
No.
With, especially in a business type of context.
No, stiff up.
Yeah, very much so. So it can take people a bit by surprise, but it just generally creates a nicer environment, and that creates a nicer world, and everybody's happy, and then I'm happy.
Aww. I feel like we should like fade out to sad music.
I'm feeling like I should start leaving popping candy all over the city again.
Oh, well, that's lovely. That's a lovely recommendation.
And so that is the end of episode 76 of A Little Bird Told Me. Head over to our website now at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com.
Or later.
But now's better. And find all the links we've been talking about. Have a read of our recommendations. Follow the links to the episodes on how to price your services.
Mm-hmm.
And
Facebook page.
Yes, that's the other one. I knew there
and
was something.
And our Facebook page.
And come visit our Facebook page. Say hello. Check it all out. If we've linked to it, we want you to read it.
She's enthusiastic now. She wants it all to be marvellous and brilliant.
Get it all said.
Yes.
Our own websites, Facebook, Twitter, all of that is there.
So once you've finished checking that out, it'll probably be time for the next podcast. But Pip will be happy, so that'll be it. So in the meantime, until we come back to your ears again, I have been Laurie Hartshorn.
And I have been Philippa Willett, and we will see you next time.